Welcome to the Inner Bottom Line. I'm your host, Olive Gallagher, and I am so excited and so thrilled to be back on Blog Talk Radio. So welcome to the show. Took a little doing. Yesterday we had serious technical problems. If any of you tried to find me, we were not able to connect. Obviously, there was a problem on the West Coast connecting to the East Coast, but here we are today, so let's put that behind us. Before we get into our conversation, you know, every day, I don't know how you feel when you wake up every day, but I wake up every day and I put a hat on because it's coming at us so fast right now. So the first thing I want to suggest that you do is just take a deep breath. This show is all about choices. It's all about better choices. It's all about finding a way, in the most simple way, to deal with a very complex and right now a very angry, a very bitter, a very attacking, vitriolic, disturbed environment that we're all living in, no matter where you stand on the issues. And this is a place for you to come and think about a few very basic questions. For those of you who are new to the show and are not familiar with my work, at heart, I'm an ethicist. I deal with ethical choices and dilemmas, and I deal with very, very simple topics. So let's get to the basics. First of all, there are only four core ethical values. And this is really important. So if you want to make a note of them, because every conversation we're going to have will refer back to these four simple but very important things, and they're values. The first one, believe it or not, is respect. The second one is honesty. And honesty is not the same as truth, and we'll get to that at some point down the line. The third one is fairness. And the last one, and the most difficult to define, is integrity. The others are easy to define. You can go to Webster and look up a definition of fairness or honesty and respect. They're hard to apply to our lives today, but they're so essential. But the integrity part, the reason it's more complex is because the definition of integrity is your personal standard of conduct. And it raises a few philosophical questions. Who are you? What do you stand for? What does your life stand for? And what do you want your legacy to be? In the end, when all is said and done, what did you stand for? If you don't know what's on your top 10 list of the most important values in your life, the values that you choose to honor, to respect, and to share with the world, to reflect onto the world, to give to the world, then there's work to be done. And I can help you with that. So welcome to the Inner Bottom Line. Somewhere down along the line of the show, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what the Inner Bottom Line is. But I wanted to share a very, very personal thing with you today that I have been wrestling with over the last 3 or 4 weeks personally. Every once in a while, I will share a personal memory or personal opinion or personal experience with you. And this one has overtaken me. And I'm sure you know what I mean when you feel overtaken by something that you just really feel you're completely out of control. Sometimes it's so overwhelming you're not sure you'll survive, but you do. You do because you find the strength to take control of your life again and take your power back. And that's what this is all about. During the show, we will take some breaks, but those breaks will always be music. There's no commercials. And because I come from a life as a musician and songwriter of many, many years, lyrics as well as music is really important to me. Songs speak to me. I hope these songs will speak to you. Sometimes the message will fit what we're talking about. Sometimes the message will take us away to a place that I want to inspire you to go, to consider, to journey to. So when we do take a break, it isn't that I've gone away, it's just that we're taking a break to hear someone else say something that's really important. And I can't think of a more appropriate place to start especially with today's topic of speaking up and finding your voice, is a great big world. So I'll be back in a little bit. Don't go away.
Say something, I'm giving up on you. I'll be the one if you want me to. Anywhere I would have followed you.
Welcome back. I'm not going to give up on you, and I'm not going to give up on me. I wasn't planning on this for the opening show. While I have now mentioned, after decades of silence, that I was once sexually assaulted many years ago, I even tweeted about it with the hashtag #WhyIDidn'tReport weeks ago, even though I now rarely tweet. I was going to spend these precious moments with you on this opening show chatting about making better choices and dealing with power and control and boundaries. But under the heading of today's show, Better Choices, I realized when my brain woke me up earlier this week that I needed to deal with first things first. And this is, at the heart of it, if we strip it down there, really all about choices and power and control and boundaries. how someone stole my choices and grabbed all the power and control from me in one moment as he abused and molested and obliterated my boundaries. So here goes. My own tale that happened long ago, and long ago before, 8 years actually, before the conscious conception of the inner bottom line hit me over the head. I wrestled with my own reality, my own facts, for very much the same reason I never spoke very much about it when it happened to me, because I had a deep feeling of, so what? It happens. Nothing really happened after all. I was lucky. I had escaped before the actual rape occurred. And bottom line, who would believe me? Who would care? After all, it was just me and him in that room. A classic, he said, she said. And since I got away, what's the big deal? I'm okay. No scars here. I'm a big girl now. Gotta fight my battles on my own. Nothing really happened. So let's take a few of these thoughts apart together. As painful as it might be for you, and certainly even now for me. Here's how it all went down. It was in the fall or early spring of 1981. Interestingly, I can't tell you what month it was. I do know this. It was during the school year and months after I had separated from a 17-year marriage. I was 37 years old, the mother of two young teenage daughters. The marriage had been fraught from the beginning with continual emotional abuse and neglect. Well, that's another story for another day. I had been brought up to believe that all marriages had good and bad times, and you stayed. Even then, in 1980, divorce was not the first or easy option. Until the first time he hit me. And then it was. I was good at tasking, organizing, housekeeping. I had kept dozens of those proverbial plates whirling in the air without them falling and breaking. Running a marriage, a house, a career, two children, five animals, a social life, hosting dinner parties, managing family and friends and obligations, driving carpools, arranging play dates, a typical, seemingly successful woman, wife, and mother. I had done it all, and I appeared to be fine. I thought I was just fine. I look back now and realize I was a mess and headed for a wall. My younger daughter was in seventh grade at Marlborough School, a private girls' school in Los Angeles, and we lived in the Palisades. So Marlborough was a long 30 to 45-minute trek each way at any hour. The mother of one of my daughter's Marlborough classmates called to tell me that a dear friend of hers was a big Hollywood mogul, the head of a record division of a major studio, and would I like to meet and sing for him? He was interested in my music. She suggested we meet for dinner first. I said, sure, thanks. I'd love to, but let's make it early as I'm driving carpool that night for an event at school and I have to drive down there and pick up my child and another girl by 10 p.m. She said, great, and hung up. I didn't give it another thought, except writing it off as a nice, even kind gesture, and probably would result in just another, do you want to meet someone important in Hollywood moment that rarely went anywhere. The plan for the evening was innocuous enough. I'd drive that evening to his penthouse in Westwood so I could leave directly after dinner and get down to school on time. The three of us had a glass of wine, and then he suggested he drive us to a nearby restaurant in his Rolls Royce. During dinner, and I remembered this later, something was off. Instead of a three-way conversation, these two pretty much ignored me while they flirted and chatted away with one another. Given that, I just sat back and listened, bored. After dinner, we returned to his place, and just as I sat down at the grand piano at his request to sing him one of my songs, this woman stood up, said, Oh, dear, I'm so sorry. I have to go. I have a terrible headache. Then blew air kisses and headed out the door. It's odd, even funny, the things that are crystal clear and the other things that are vague. I remember the sound of the door slamming as she disappeared. I vaguely recall him pulling me up off the piano bench, pushing me over to the couch and falling on top of me. What is still crystal clear is what I was thinking. Isn't that amazing? I knew I had to be nice and not fight back, or he might kill me after he rapes me. I have to talk my way out of here. I have to get to that door. I must have said something like, I'd love to stay, but you know, I'm expected at school, and if I don't show up, they'll know something's wrong. Why don't you walk me downstairs to my car, and we'll make another date to meet again when I have no other place to be except with you. We'll be right back. Thank you. I remember vaguely him walking me downstairs to my car. I can still see myself standing at my open car door, desperate to get away, but letting him paw me while I promised we'd meet again. And then climbing into my green Volvo station wagon with my olive license plate and driving away, my hands shaking on the wheel so hard I could barely hold on. It was some time on that surreal drive downtown that I realized that I was missing one of my good pearl earrings and knew instantly where it probably was, in the cushions of that horrible couch, and that I'd never see it again. I don't remember much about the rest of that night. I do remember that I called the woman the next day and told her that I knew what she had done and to stay away and never speak to me or my child again, or I'd report her to the dean. I even vaguely recall writing this guy a letter and telling him to never come near me again or I'd report him, as if that was enough to clear the slate. And it occurred to me in the past few days that in not responding, not reporting this man and filing charges for attempted assault and rape, in not making a police report right then and there, I became, just like the title of Al Gore's brilliant film, an inconvenient truth. I was an inconvenient truth. Somehow, with all the heartbreaking details of Dr. Christine Ford's revealing and vulnerable story in the past several weeks, it was the fact that she couldn't access certain specific details that finally broke me wide open after so many years of helping other women deal with their own stories. The fact that she couldn't remember the exact address of the house, the exact date, even the specific time of year. The fact that she's been taunted and ridiculed and objectified for that in the most horrific, public, and abusive, despicable way. And it brought me right back again to face my own blank slate about certain things that night and other moments of abuse or assault, subtle or not, by others during my own life, the implied demands to put out in order to get a job, a role, a part, a contract, or the insulting jeers or jokes or innuendos about my looks or my body that force me to confront the fact there are other details that I will never, ever, ever, ever forget about that night, that moment, when it was fight or flight, when it was about survival. The moment I realized on that mindless drive to pick up my child, wait a second, why did that woman suddenly get a headache and just leave? What I was feeling at that moment in that car, there was already a tiny imprint, a new memory of a small voice deep inside me that had minutes before on that couch begun screaming, "Oh, no, 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 danger, 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 run, run, run." What I was feeling, hearing, listening to at that moment, that night, driving down Wilshire Boulevard, tears wetting my dress, is what I named years later the inner bottom line. That private place, that instinct, voice that speaks truth, that holds our most sacred memories and secrets safe from the world. At that moment, it had not yet been named, been recognized. For me, what made the entire experience even more obscene was that I was set up by another woman. How's that for irony? The facts will never leave. I can see the room, exactly where the piano stood, where the couch was, the door through which I escaped, how fat and disgusting he was, how repulsed I felt by him, and at the same time, how far away I was in my head, as if I was in a control booth or tower, talking the rest of me through this ordeal, talking myself down to land safely onto some distant runway so I could rush away from this unspeakable moment. I think, in retrospect, what provides the double whammy, what makes a terrible, unspeakable moment even more unspeakable, are the usual questions the disbelievers, the abusers, though with no respect for others, though who, sadly, are mostly men, but sometimes women ask, why did it take you so long to say something? If it was so terrible, why didn't you say something? And this is key. If it's true, if it really happened to you, why don't you remember everything?
When you try your best, but you don't succeed. When you get what you want, but not what you need. When you feel so tired, but you can't sleep. Stuck in reverse. And the tears come streaming down your face. When you lose something you can't replace. When you love someone but it goes to waste. Could it be
an email from someone asking me if I would say a little bit more about the inner bottom line, so I will do that. Thank you so much for that email. Let me give you the call-in number. I would love to hear from you. Call into the studio if you're listening live. Of course, if you're listening after we're off the air, you can send me emails at theinnerbottomline@gmail.com. But the call-in number, so take a note, make a note of this. It's 929-477-3854. That is 929-477-3854. 929-477-3854. I would love to hear from you. You know, none of us get through this life unscathed. We all have our scars. We all have our stories. We all have difficult moments that we're confronted with, where we have to really dig down deep and find a place to get, where we can find the tools, we can find the strength, where we can find the clarity to somehow understand what's happening to us and take back our power, take back the control of our lives, and take back our voice. As I said at the opening of the show, I was on the air for many, many years, and I've talked a lot about choices and values and how they are intertwined, and that it all comes down to power and control, and it's all about relationships. When someone says to me, well, Olive, it's just business, I always say, no, it's never business. It's always personal, because no matter what you do in your life at any time of the day with someone else, it's about a relationship. If you're buying gas from the guy that's filling up the tank, that's a relationship. If you're rude to him or he's rude to you, there you have it, right there. So when someone says to me, it's just business, I always say, no, it's always personal. It always comes down to being personal, which is why my company's called Personal Best. I also wanted to throw something out there for you to think about, and we're going to talk about it more as we move through our shows. Also, I want to let you know, we have a couple of wonderful guests already coming on board before the end of the year. On October 23rd, I have a very delightful gentleman coming on by the name of Peter Toll. Peter Toll is a very big Democratic operative in Oregon. I've had the pleasure of getting to know him as a colleague, and we're going to just basically talk about the choice of voting, how essential it is for all of you, everyone, to go and vote. In Oregon, if you're listening in Oregon, the ballots are already in the mail. So if you're not registered, that is a problem. But if you're somewhere else and it is still time for you to register, please. And if you are registered, you must exercise this choice. You get the country you deserve. If you do not vote, if you don't speak up, then whatever you get, you gave up being a part of it. So let me do this. I had an idea here, and I mentioned before I interrupted myself, you'll notice I do that a lot. It occurred to me the other day that the world is made up of two kinds of people. I put them into two different camps. I call them givers and takers, because right now, for the last 2 years, what we've been confronted with is a redefinition of what the word winning means. And what it reminded me of is when I was going through my divorce, I was having a very hard time understanding why. After so many years of building a life together, I was the one that was taking the high road, and he was taking the low one. I didn't know how to do it any other way. I still don't. That's why I do what I do. But he was really good at it. And finally, someone who knew him well said to me one day, in a very loving way, said to me, here's what he's all about. His definition of winning is when everyone else loses. I just want you to think about that for a minute. His definition of winning is when everyone else loses. And I realized my definition of winning was when everyone walked away from the table feeling that it was a reasonable place to be, that it was okay, that you didn't walk away having lost it all, just for the sake of having to lose it all. And so in this world, there are givers and there are takers. Givers are people where the arrows are leaving their solar plexus, where their inner bottom line is, their gut, their heart, and the arrows are going out into the world. My older daughter is a giver, been giving since she's a little girl, and she still is doing it in her life, in every way of her life, every aspect of her life. It makes me very, very proud of her, and it also makes me admire and respect her so much. She gives, and because she gives, she receives. And then there are the takers. Their hands are always with the palms down. Their hands are always out grabbing. And the arrows are always coming into them. They're the ones that are always trying to take control of everything. They're the ones that are always trying to win and want you to lose. So I just want you to think about, who are you? Are you a giver? Are you a taker? Because even though you can say, well, I do take, but I also give back. Yes, giving always gets, I say. It's a premise in my book. Giving always gets. But in which order? Are you giving and then you receive, or are you taking and then maybe you get something, then you maybe give something back because, you know, you're supposed to. Just a thought. Let me introduce you to the inner bottom line. This isn't going to take very long, but I'm going to read the prologue from my book, A Simple Path to the Good Life. There is a place inside each of us where we dwell, a place where we live, exist, extol, and exclaim, where we go to be alone with ourselves, cry, laugh, swear, anguish, worry, bitch, dream, fantasize, imagine, and escape, where we bemoan our problems, decry our enemies, and explore our possibilities without judgment, comment, or criticism from anyone other than ourselves. Call it your heart. Label it your soul, your spirit, center, being, gut. Whatever it is, whatever its name, it is the only totally private, unseen, singular place within us that belongs to us and us alone. And that makes it worth protecting, defending, and appreciating beyond any measurable worth. Within this priceless place lies the inner bottom line. From the moment we're born, we have choices. Choices about what we'll do, how far we'll go, what price we'll pay to get what we want, and how we'll handle whatever we get when we get it. Each of us starts out with the same basics. Building blocks, the same tools. While our intelligence, instincts, intuition, senses, and values may vary, we all start out possessing the same four core ethical values, here we go again, of honesty, fairness, respect, and integrity. However, while we may stand on common ground to start, we choose to do with those values that determines our standard of conduct, our integrity, and the path we follow. Our ethical values are deeply influenced and shaped by what we learn from the world around us, our family center, our neighborhood, our culture, and our environment. But while they indelibly shape our interpretation of our values and their worth, it is our choices and our personal accountability for those choices, measured on our very own inner bottom line, that ultimately makes the difference in how we live our lives and what we give back to the world. Along with our accountability, everything else in our life comes down to how we perceive, define, experience, and handle power, control, and fear, and what we intend. Over and over again, we will be faced with three tough questions that will keep us up at night. Who's in control? What's at stake? What price am I paying for the life I lead today? On the inner bottom line, abuse of any kind is not respectful and therefore is not acceptable. It will always be the inner bottom line that you turn to or be forced to face as a measuring stick, a guideline, a tally to compare what you aspire to and what you've actually accomplished. That's why in the end, the only opinion, judgment, or standard that will matter will be your own. In your heart, your soul, your mind, you will never be able to run away from your own truth. Who you are, what you're made of, and what you've done with the life you were given to live. Ultimately, the choices you make create your life. You choose it, you own it. Pleasure to share this hour with you. The last thing I wanted to share with you today, and I thank you for listening to, for me, what has been a very personal time. I rarely have shared anything quite that personal, but it's very interesting how the time has prompted a need to speak up and a need to own your voice. So if you have not done that in your life, I encourage you, consider doing that for yourself. And if I can help you in any way, you can call me at 503-855-4007. I do see people in my private practice. I'm also available to you in an email, and I get emails all the time from people And I'm more than delighted to at least initially talk with you that way. And you can reach me at theinnerbottomline@gmail.com. And the call-in number for the show is 929-477-3854. And we have 15 minutes left. And I wanted to share with you my most recent editorial that I've written. Again, this has been the stuff's just pouring out right now. I know a lot of writers feel that way when the pressure of the world around them gets too much. It's important. I have a responsibility to speak up. And so this was a thought that I had, and I called it the safe haven of a small, elegant word. Dignity. A word with few letters, on appearance not very large, but elegant, succinct, with enormous reach when it's authentic and honest and organic. Not used often enough in today's world to describe someone's character or attitude. And yet, it is a momentous, precious, rare word, containing deep value, representing deeper values. Today, in light of all the events and another mind-bending, did that really happen week? We've all sadly gotten too accustomed to accepting as, quote, normal. This word has emerged for me as the key one, a most accurate, deeply appropriate, and somewhat surprising word in the devastation left behind. Dignity, human rights, they fit together, reflect well upon one another. Dignity has been the pivotal word trampled, defamed, and overlooked in our country's passionate struggle towards a more perfect union and a more compassionate, accepting world. And it forces me reluctantly to ask the question, in only a few years, have we really fallen this far? Only a few years ago, dignity was the perfect descriptor for President Obama's presence and eloquent, heartfelt eulogy on behalf of the victims of the hateful, despicable, and tragic shootings in Charleston, South Carolina. It was also the essence of the grace exhibited by those touched by the unspeakable Sandy Hook tragedy, individuals who chose peace and healing over hatred and violence versus the hateful conspiracy path chosen by others. Dignity, a quality I associate with very few in my memory. Reaching back through the years, an assortment of faces and voices come to mind. Elie Wiesel, Pope Francis, Rosa Parks, Nelson Mandela. I've also been struck by how many conversations with colleagues and clients have, at some point, turned to the hunger and need and desire to find a sense of home, a feeling of belonging, a town, a place that feels safe, that offers a safe haven in a world that seems to have gone mad, fallen over the edge, lost its way as we slowly, inexorably destroy this earth and all its precious living creatures, the very things that guarantee our own survival. I've written for 20 years how the choices we make will determine our survival, our future, how we have proven to be a scavenger-like creature, greedily gobbling up everything in sight, a species filled with self-destructive arrogance whose behavior suggests it's totally in control and owns the planet, that it has a right, some even go so far to say a God-given right, to take and plunder whatever we find, whenever we want it. That's not the definition of respect or dignity. We can heed our better angels. We each possess one. We can live our lives with honor and respect and kindness, cherishing the gifts we have and taking care of others along the way. In that world, there is no place for guns or violence or war, for hunger or prejudice or abuse, for lies. We can create and build livelihoods and towns and homes where we can feel safe and our children can grow up with examples of respect and compassion and honor. So, if we're capable of that, if we can do that, then please explain how we've become the gun and murder capital of the world, how we've incarcerated more people for minor crimes than any civilized nation, how we've chosen to separate children from their parents, and how our children are growing up in a world where hunger still exists, clean water isn't available to all, and where violence continues in the name of God to kill and plunder and destroy. I'd really like to know why. Because in the face of simple, elegant acts of dignity, in the respectful acknowledgement of establishing and granting basic human rights that should never have been denied any person in the first place, regardless of who they are, where they come from, and who and how they choose to love, all of that rage and hatred and violence and greed doesn't make any sense at all to me. What about you?
Direct me, bless me,
back to The Inner Bottom Line. I'm your host, Olive Gallagher, and it's been a delight to spend this hour with you. I wanted to just finish by sharing a couple more thoughts with you. I came across a saying yesterday that I thought was really fabulous. The only way on earth to multiply happiness is to divide it. Now let's go back to the whole idea of givers and takers. Are you a giver or are you a taker? And here's the most wonderful idea of all. If you don't like the way you are in your world, you can choose to change it. You have total accountability and responsibility and freedom to change it. I think of life, I think of my days, I think of my existence in the form of a kaleidoscope. Oh, sorry about that. In the form of a kaleidoscope. You know, when you look through the lens, you look at all those beautiful designs. If you move it just a tiny, tiny, tiny bit and one crystal moves, everything changes. It's fascinating. So I like to think of change as making tiny little differences, making tiny little change. Change is a very scary word. I find with clients, they like the known. They like the way it is, even if they're miserable. But they know their misery. They're comfortable with that misery. The idea of changing anything can be very, very terrifying. But it can be done. So let's go back to the first question. You may have noticed, by the way, that I ask questions. I'm known for asking questions. Because if you want answers, you have to ask questions. You have to be open to asking questions. So let's go back to the initial questions I asked you. Who are you? What do you stand for? What do you value most? And what price are you paying for the life you lead today? Is it stress? Is it addiction? Is it misery? Is it unhappiness? Together, we can explore all of that. So again, I thank you for joining me on The Inner Bottom Line. Every choice you make has a price. And every choice that you make, you own it. Thank you so much for sharing your time with me. I'll be back next week on Tuesday at 3 p.m. Please come back. Please listen. Please send me your messages. And again, thank you so much for joining me. Then it's changing inside of me. Woke up today.